Everyone's asleep.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting from New Zealand, the allegedly free, allegedly least corrupt, allegedly nuclear free, allegedly New Zealand, in the sunny slave South Pacific, the shining jewel, the Cayman Island branch of the Rockefeller banking cartel. You've got to love it. You've just got to love it. With Prime Ministers and all sorts of other assorted scum comprising the majority of the makeup of our country. And incidentally, like a stagnant pond, the scum have risen to the top and choked out all the light and all the nutrients from all of us, the undergrowth beneath the waters. It's unfortunate. And it's worse because it's not just isolated to New Zealand. Because anybody could have just turned into this broadcast and go, oh, is he talking about America? Is he talking about the UK? Is he talking about Australia? And by proxy, yes, I am. We're all screwed and covered in scum. And conveniently, just what happens is that somebody winds up rising up and going, you know what, I don't like those scum. I'm going to do something about those scum. I'm going to do something about it today. And incidentally, we're going to do it in the UK with Tony Sayers. Tony, welcome to the program.
Morning. How are you? Okay?
Well, you know, I'm all right. You know, I'm getting there.
Good. Yeah, well, I mean, it's good to hear that we're all sort of on the same level there with the corruption and the savagery going on. It's across the board, that's for sure, isn't it?
I've never been seen to say that I'm really glad that everybody's got the same level of corruption.
Yeah, no, that probably is the wrong phrase in there.
Maybe the awareness of said corruption is probably a good... The level of awareness of the corruption and the scumbaggery that's going on is probably a positive thing, methinks.
Yeah, a very small minority, if that's the case. Yeah, We're still aiming for to get that 1%, though, aren't we?
Yeah, 1%, 2%, 3%, you know, it doesn't matter how many people there are involved. It usually just takes one. The people are sheep, you know, and they always follow a shepherd, regardless of whether or not that shepherd leads them onto greener pastures or a friggin' slaughterhouse. Just turns out the guys that have the keys to the slaughterhouse also have really nice cattle cars for you to arrive in, you know.
And they have nice things to watch along the path as well, don't they, just to keep you distracted.
Yeah, exactly. But enough about my personal life. Let's talk about you.
Thanks, yeah. Well, it's been a bit of a roller coaster, really, in the last few years. Just to give you a bit of background, I'm a run-of-the-mill sort of guy, just doing a full-time job still, as I say. And a couple of years ago, I woke up to what's going on in the world. And like most of the people that probably appear on your shows, you thought they think, well, we need to do something about it. And I was woken up by sort of David Icke videos and things like that. I just got to the point in my life where, you know, I literally was sort of questioning everything. And yeah, it just led me on a path to all the horror that's going on. And then the natural reaction for me was I need to sort of make people aware and try and do something about it. And like a lot of people as well, I guess I've been hammering people with the truth stick for a couple of years, and it's really got me sort of limited success, and just been searching for a solution, getting quite frustrated in the process because the solutions out there, they don't seem to be uniting us. They don't seem to be working. So, I stumbled across a lady called Tara Ahmed at a speech. She was it was like a conference, and she was speaking about this idea called the reset. And I was listening to her, and it sounded so fantastic. It just sounded too good to be true. So I went away and started looking into it more, and then. A synchronicity had it. I met her again a few weeks later at a party, and she was going into it again about the reset and about how they're looking for people to sort of help get the word out there. And that since then I've been sort of head in it, you know, up to my head in it. It's just been crazy. There's this very small amount of people actually pushing this right now. I'd say sort of a core group of about 5 or 6 people, but the concept's fantastic. So I can talk a bit more about that now if you'd like.
Yeah, go for your life, son.
Yeah. So basically, we here in the UK, we have certain rights and laws that are enshrined in our Magna Carta.
I'm sorry, just whenever anybody says, oh, we've got certain rights, I just...
rights, you know, with the in commas, basically. So we have certain laws that are enshrined within the Magna Carta that if they get out of sync, like they clearly have today, with corruption and what have you, then we as the people actually have the ability to reset the constitution from a local parish level. Now, this has actually happened 45 times throughout history. And actually, the Magna Carta was actually a reset. And others have been like the Bill of Rights. You've probably heard of that as well. So this has actually been done before. Obviously, it's been well hidden from us. There's not been a reset done since the 1700s when the Rothschild banking families came in.
Whenabouts was the last of the Queen's Jubilees by chance? It was around the 1700s as well.
Yeah, it's no coincidence, is it? So
one of my favourite phrases is, oh, what a tangled web we weave.
Absolutely, yeah. So this is something that has actually been done before, where the people have actually stood up and said, you know what, we're not taking this anymore, and actually reset the constitution. And actually, it's very, very simple to do. It sounds like a complicated process, but the science behind it is in the UK, we have what we call parishes and wards. And basically what they are is local areas. So, for example, I live in an area called Ealing in London. So my parish would be, or my ward would be Ealing. Now, I would only need 10 people within my local ward to call for a local referendum. And you don't even need all the parishes or wards within the UK to call for a local referendum. So you only need a majority. Once you get the 10 people within your ward, you can then take it to a regional referendum and then to the national convention, whereby that our law is the highest in the land. So the UK is built on a trust, and the politicians and the monarchy, they're just the administrators. The people are the trustees and the beneficiaries.
Well, so it appears that the trust has been violated several times.
Just a tiny bit. So this
is like the JonBenet Ramsey of trusts.
Exactly. So these laws are actually, they go higher than the parliament. They go higher than the monarchy, and they're the highest in the realm. So the parliament and the monarchy are actually supposed to be working for us. So this can all be changed from local level, which is really exciting, because what that will do is it will be the vehicle to actually get people to unite and to all sort of gather in one movement. Now, the beauty with the reset is that how are you going to get the masses interested, the people that are watching the sport on TV or X Factor, the people that are distracted by the circus? Well, the only way you're going to get them interested is if you affect their wallet, their pockets. So what we're proposing with the reset is that we pay in this country over 300 income taxes, ranging from pastry tax, so you can't even buy a pie without being taxed on it, to car taxes, you can't even die without being taxed, inheritance tax. So this is how bad it's got. I'm sure it's similar over there as well.
It's just testament to how unsuspicious everybody is. There's an old saying, there are only two things that are certain in life, death and taxes. And you figure they would have figured it out earlier, that it's the taxes that are killing you people.
Yeah, I know. It's so clear to see, isn't it? And it's just the apathy, really, where people just accept this, don't they? So we pay over 300 taxes here in the UK. 67% of my wages this year, my hard-earned graft, is going to go on income taxes. Now, to say that slavery is an understatement. So what we're proposing is to... The other thing is, sorry, is war. Taxation was only ever a wartime measure. Now, officially, we're not at war, although unofficially we're at war with our own governments, but we're not officially at war with anyone, so taxes are actually unlawful, so we shouldn't be paying them at all. So what we're proposing with reset is abolishing all income taxes and introducing something called TEAL, which stands for Total Economic Activity Levy. Now, basically, what that's going to be is a 1% charge on all commercial transactions. So just say you went into Starbucks, not that you would, and bought a coffee, you would pay 1% on that coffee and Starbucks would pay 1% on that coffee. And what that would do is, last year, the current taxation system generated £500 million. With TEAL in place, it would create £500 billion. With TEAL in place, it would create an extra trillion. So £1.5 trillion. Now, that would wipe off the national debt within 3 years. It would give every man, woman and child a living wage of £7,500 a year. And it would give local authorities millions more to spend where they see fit. So that's the plan. And it would shift the hardship back from the people, back onto the corporations and the bankers that are not paying anything at the moment. I mean, Starbucks...
Wouldn't the bankers just use it as another form of tax on the people and then pocket the money after they leverage it and then get debt and mortgage the country again with even more higher debt because they've got more tax to pay off, more regular repayments to the bankers?
Well, at the moment, we're paying sort of 20% on VAT on everything.
Are you talking about wiping out the other form of tax and replacing it with this one?
Absolutely, yeah. So it's literally shifting it to make it fairer.
Also makes it a hell of a lot simpler for people. I mean, I don't know. Can you remember the exact wording to 600 different types of tax that you have to pay in the average year, so that if you, you know, did something wrong, you could defend it in court, or at least possibly understand that you, the tax you're paying is actually lawful? No? No? I didn't think so.
Yeah, I know. But these companies, I mean, they're just fleecing us. You know, McDonald's, Starbucks, Google, Amazon, the list goes on. They're not paying any taxes in this country. People just accepting it, as we say. So what this will do, it will just shift the power back from the bankers' corporations back to the people.
That's acting under the assumption that the people have any kind of control of the government and the treasury and the purse strings of it, and whether or not there is still a private central banking cartel issuing the public currency.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, the way I see it, I mean, I look at reset with sort of a wider vision. So we're starting with taxes, but we have the power to change anything from this local level. So say we don't want GMOs in a certain area, then they can have their referendums, and we can get all these things taken out, because, as I say, our law is the highest. It goes back to our common law, which is the highest in the realm. But the other thing it will do as a saving, it will unite everyone. So I don't know whether you've checked out the website, but we've got a new...
We'll give the website out for people as well, yeah.
Yeah, so it's www.thereset.org. And basically all you need to do is you register your name, postcode and email address. When you get... you'll receive a welcome email. When you get 10 people within your parish or ward, you'll then receive another email to say, right, you've now got 10 people, you're ready for your local referendum, and then it gets advertised in a newspaper. And we introduced, this is why it's taken off the last 2 weeks, because we've been talking about the idea and how it's going to unite everyone. But we've got this fantastic guy, Matt, who is doing the IT part on it, and he's just designed this thing called the Community Connector, which is enabling people to actually talk to each other within their parish or ward. And there's been a number of local meetings already just in the last couple of weeks where people have connected on the Community Connector and organized little meetups. So people are now seeing how this is actually going to start uniting people. The way I see it is taxation is really just the catalyst for a much wider vision, a vision where, you know, it's going to give people the confidence to stand in their own power again. It's going to unite everyone. I mean, there's 6,500 social movement groups in the UK alone, all doing their own thing, sort of fracking, chemtrails, all doing great work, but... You know, they're all doing their own thing. So,
well, the way I look at it is we're all under attack from a number of different directions, and it takes individual groups and individual cases with expertise, specialization. It's almost like a human social corporation that has sprung up with entrepreneurs, yeah, and what have you to handle particular social and economic problems throughout the community. And I think what you're doing is you're actually trying to almost nexus those social movements together, so that you can actually use the collective draw card of it to relieve everybody of the constant, persistent burden of horrible, yeah, taxation. Is that about right?
Yeah.
So that means, yeah, everybody will have a lot more free time and won't have to work quite so hard at their slave job in order, yeah, to perhaps devote it to their activism, not to mention all, yeah, the other people who don't have the extra income that's sucked up by the Rothschild banking cartel vacuum cleaner that hovers just around the wallet region. You don't know where the hell it comes from. It's all of a sudden, where's my £20 note? I just had it here. It just got sucked up by the Rothschilds again.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. We need all these groups. All these groups are doing such great work. I think what we're doing at the moment is we're kind of chipping away at the problem, but nothing's really changing, is it? So this is why I think the reset's going to be powerful, because it's going to get the masses that aren't that bothered involved. It's going to perk their ears up, and you know that's what we need. We need the numbers. We need the numbers to come together. So instead of making a dent, we can really do some serious damage to this system.
Not just make a dent. You can puncture and rupture the hull of this big what was it? Lordship, I guess?
Yeah, well, dictatorship.
It is a dictatorship, yeah.
Yeah.
The reset will be the iceberg of the dictatorship Titanic.
Yeah. And we'll talk about the spiritual aspect of it for a second, because I think it's important. It is a movement very much, for the people. And there's no leaders involved. Anyone can get involved. It doesn't matter, you know, what job you do, what colour you are, what sexuality you are. It's literally a grassroots movement for anyone to get involved. So the idea is that we're all leaders. We're all leaders in this movement. And I really see that it can cut the head off the snake. So I'm really excited about it. It's the only solution that I've seen that I feel can get us anywhere and get us united. But I think it goes much deeper to that than that. I'm looking, what we're aiming for, Vinny, is, and get this for synchronicity. Next year is the 800th anniversary of the Magna Carta. So I'm just imagining they've already got their celebrations planned at Runnymede, which is where it was obviously signed off. And Barack Obama's coming over and the Queen's going to be there. And it would just be just perfect if we could just hijack it with the reset, you know. And also, it's the general elections next year as well over here. So you can imagine all these MPs sort of lobbying for power, Miliband, Cameron. And then underneath, you've got this massive social movement that's just growing and growing. I honestly think it's just sort of written in the stars. So that's why I'm excited about it.
Well, I guess the one thing that's really important in anything that you do is having at least a bit of passion about it. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely, yeah.
It really sucks when you're just going through the motions. I mean, you know, there's enough lodge meetings at any Freemasonic temple around here if you want to go through the rigmarole. But for frack's sake, mate, give me some passion, give me some action, get something done, for goodness sake.
Well, this is it. And what I'm finding is within the truth community is not everyone, but you offer a solution that could really get us somewhere. A lot of the time you get a lot of negativity back. And it's almost like a lot of people are sort of stuck in the problem, and they kind of identify themselves with the problem. And the other problem you have is the people that have tried their way for so long and it hasn't worked. Their ego won't let them sort of look at anything different. I mean, don't get me wrong, there's thousands of people that are starting to get interested in this now, but it has shocked me really within the so-called truth movement, where people are really they're just so focused on problems when we really need to start looking at solutions. I mean, I spent years, you know, the last few years banging on about the problems, you know, hasn't really got me anywhere. So
I find it's actually very, very difficult when you're describing the problems and you're approaching many different people, how to measure the results.
Yeah.
You notice there's actually a ripple effect that happens.
Yeah.
I was thinking for a while, what have I accomplished? You know, who the hell have I woken up? And then all of a sudden all these messages come at me. Oh my God, Vinny, you woke me up, etc., blah, 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 blah. And so I'm just sitting here doing my thing, not actually looking all the time, saying, I'm going to follow you up. Hey, man, I talked to you a year ago. Have you woken up yet? Devil helped you. I don't think so. You know, you just do what you think is right at the time and go for your life, son, you know?
Exactly. But, yeah, it would be interested when all's said and done to know sort of how many people we all have woken up. But
Well, there was a study that was done, and I think this is quite a poignant one. Well, I won't mention two, actually. One is about smiles. One's about the amount of people that needs to tell you something, right?
Right.
Apparently, to get rid of and change a rigidly held belief, you need 7 different people to tell you. So if you've got one person beating you with the truth stick over the head over and over and over again, you're not going to be any more receptive until 6 other people do the exact same thing to you.
And that's interesting.
And the second one is the smiles. Apparently, one smile will travel and multiply 7 times. So you smile one person on the street and they smile back, they're likely to smile at another 6 people. All right, so there's one forward, one back, and then replicated times 6, and then one forward, and then one back, and then replicated on top of that. Right?
Interesting.
And they did this. They fed this data into a computer program, and it turns out that one smile can change the world.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. It's like
the whole collective mood of everything, you know. So just be heartened, both yourself, Tony, and everybody else. The little things that you do have a big impact somewhere along the way. It's like the butterfly effect thing.
Yeah, the whole 100 monkey. Yeah, but for every sort of person that's looking at it negatively, there's 10 people that are so excited about it.
It's because funny we're you
ready. I can't remember who said that you can't stop an idea that time has come, and that's exactly what I feel with the reset. And one of the reasons is I wanted to speak to you, obviously over in New Zealand, is that a lot of, you're obviously a Commonwealth country, and it's...
Well, we've got a lot in common, and that is that we don't have any wealth left because the elite stole it all.
Yeah, absolutely. So there are people looking into sort of reset versions in likes of New Zealand, Australia, America. We don't have all the answers yet, but...
When the boys get active in New Zealand, I'll interview them. There's the dudes down the way from the Money Free Party, Richard Osmasterson. I have him. It was kind of a very interesting political ideology, very, very similar to the Zeitgeist thing, but actually they kind of worked out a lot of the kinks. Quite interesting, very popular interview. I'm sorry, Tony, we've run out of time for this segment. Thank you very much. That's Tony Sayers, ladies and gentlemen, thereset.org. That's thereset.org. Like a computer, if it's got something really, really wrong with it and you can't figure out what it is, you really just can't keep running the programs. You got to hit the reset button, bro. You know, that's been a philosophy of mine for a long time, which is why I bought a Mac, because they don't freeze up like that. We'll see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen, after the break.
Came in, the air went out, and every shadow filled up with doubt. I don't know who you think you are, but before the night is through, I wanna do bad things with you.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. This one's a very exciting episode, mind you, because we have, I don't know, me and my mate Mikhail were really, really getting into our music one night. That's a euphemism for something. And we thought about, you know, what would be the coolest interview, you know, something that I haven't done before, something nobody hadn't been done. And I had these two listeners, maybe even more actually, telling me that I needed to get Max Egan back on. And another couple of listeners who listened to my Jordan Maxwell interview for a while back, and they're saying, we need to get Jordan on. And I thought, and I was like, boom, it came into my head. You get Jordan Maxwell and Max Egan on the Vinnie Eastwood Show for 2 hours, bro. That sounded really choice. We were like, oh my God, I can't wait to listen to that. And now, you get to listen to it. We have Jordan Maxwell and Max Egan on the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Jordan Maxwell's website is jordanmaxwellshow.com, not to be confused with jordanmaxwell.com. And Max Egan's show is thecrowhouse.com. Welcome, gentlemen.
Well, thank you for having me on again.
Also, Jordan has a bad connection. This is mostly because all of his equipment, research materials, clothing, etc., his life's work, all his belongings, burnt to the ground this morning. And there is a short video on the YouTube channel, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com has a link to the YouTube page where you can hear Jordan talk about that and explain what we need from you, the listeners, as well. And namesake, probably around about $5,000 to just get him back on his feet in terms of being able to record shows again with a little computer. He's got people that have good, you know, connections and whatnot. They can get it all cheapy. So go to jordanmaxwellshow.com and donate today. And also we'd like to introduce Max Egan.
Hey, Vinny. Thanks for having me on again, brother. Nice to be on with Jordan.
Yeah, it is. It is. Now, prefacing this conversation, I was talking to Jordan before the show. He's been threatened recently. See, you've got it coming at you from all angles, don't you, mate? He's been threatened recently not to talk about government conspiracy, so we're not going to talk about that today. In fact, we've done shockingly large amounts of content. Jordan's been doing it for 54 years. I'm tired of it. Max, are you a little bit tired of it, do you know, to a degree?
To a degree. I mean, it's still going on, but yeah, it does become tiresome. It
becomes kind of tedious, right? So, you know, talking about your own enslavement and extermination, you know, I was like, getting bored now. No. but yeah, we want to talk about spirituality. And as we were saying just off air before, had an interview just before today saying that spirituality and religion are mutually exclusive. Jordan, I'd like to hear your thoughts on that.
Absolutely. There's no doubt that it's been proven now around the world that the world is filled with religions. People are praying to their gods, all the different gods of the Jews, the Islamic people, the Christians. And the more people are praying around the world to their God, the worse our world is becoming day by day, the more corrupt, the more evil. So there's no doubt in my mind that religion is the problem.
What he said, ladies and gentlemen, is it robs you of your spirituality and you don't need something external in order to guide your spirituality. You have that guiding light within you. Is that more or less it?
That's it.
Mm-hmm. And Max, you also had a comment to make about this too, didn't you?
Well, that's exactly what it does. I mean, religion has hijacked spirituality and it's turned it into something very negative. And even when you look at what happens in the situation of a church, it's actually a very negative ritual that's going on in a church. You've got people that are going there because they're in a state of fear, for a start. They're in a state, you know, they're scared that they're going to go to hell if they don't go to pray to this God. They go to a building and they are in a state of fear and they're praying for their own self-preservation and they're doing what is essentially negative affirmations. They're praying for peace and they're praying for love. So essentially they're acknowledging that there is no peace and there is no love. And they're doing it in a building designed to channel energy and they're doing it in a state of fear. So the whole thing is negative right from the very, very onset. Now you look at a traditional prayer, the way a Native American or a shaman would pray, they would put themselves in the energetic state where their prayer had already been answered. If you wanted peace in the world, you would put yourself in a state where you are feeling the peace in the world. You are feeling the love in the world. If you wanted rain, you'd go and put yourself in the energetic state where you're standing in the rain. And you'd call that reality in because reality will mirror back to you the emotional state that you're in. And churches and religion are designed to put you in a negative emotional state and get you praying for self-preservation, essentially, and doing negative affirmations the whole time you're there. So they're very, very insidious places.
I think that anybody who asks other people to believe what they're saying on their word and doesn't encourage them to research further into what they're telling them and doesn't encourage them to question them is inherently corrupt or corruptible at the very least.
Well, yeah, of course, of course. I mean, everything should be, you know, open to your own interpretation. You need to investigate everything everybody says. I even say that with my shows. Don't believe me, go and investigate for yourself. All I'm offering you is my perspective. And that's what religion's done. It's offered you their perspective. But it's put the fear of God into you so that if you don't take my perspective on as reality, then you're going to go and burn in hell. It puts you in this state of fear. You know, it's mind control. The whole thing's about mind control. And it's very disempowering. It's designed to shift you away from your own spiritual power and cause you to place that power in an external being. And it's all a fiction. It's all an illusion. It's very, very negative
stuff.
Well,
they do the opposite of the sales pitch, Max, in a lot of cases. They say, we bring you love. We bring you peace. We bring you contentment. And then, once you become an employee of the church, we bring you small boys and we charge large amounts of money for them.
Yeah, well, that's another side to it, isn't it?
You know, that's the inner circle. No pun intended. And the horrific nature of psychopathy, I think, really kind of spells this out to a large degree, because, after all, psychopaths crave power and control. There's a couple of institutions that have a lot of power and control that basically influence society to a large extent, and religion is certainly one of them.
Well, yeah, absolutely. You know, there's a lot of stuff that goes on with religion. I mean, a lot of the psychopaths hide there, and there's a lot of, you know, really, really insidious stuff that goes on in churches and in convents, and it is very, very negative places. But I mean, just look at the fruit that religion has borne. Really, if you look at the world, you look at the world in the last few hundred years, so many wars have been fought in the name of religion. So many people have died in the name of religion. All these religions essentially preach love and peace. But they all preach religious superiority as well. You know, love the guys from the other faith. Don't judge them badly, but understand that if you belong to this faith, then only you are going to go to heaven. So only you are special. Even though we can't judge these people bad, you're special. So it's all based on supremacism. And every religion does this. And, you know, they're taught to, you know, eye for an eye, all this violent stuff. Let's go and force ourselves on other people. It's all ridiculous. And all the redeemer complex that goes with Christianity as well. I mean, it's okay for you to go and kill the others because you're just doing God's will and Jesus died for your sins anyway, so it's okay.
Yeah. So Bill Hicks criticized Christianity one time in a small southern town. A couple of guys came up to him and said, "Hey, buddy, come here. We're Christians. We didn't like what you said." He said, "Then forgive me."
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's the way it should be, but it isn't that way. I mean, look at the fruit that it's borne. It's brought endless bloodshed to the world, endless war to the world. So, you know, you've really got to examine what this stuff is and where it's going, where it comes from. I mean, look what the Vatican's done. Look where it all comes from. Look at the fruit that it's borne.
Yeah, yeah. But that said, I have seen individual practitioners who don't belong to a massive hierarchy, evilarchy, which is a mixture of evil, the monarchy, and malarchy, who go out and do this, their own thing, their own way. And incidentally, they don't get too much favour from the community. Saw a couple of videos for Christian pastors who were feeding the homeless. They collect donations from their parish, they load up a truck full of food and water bottles, and they go under bridges and things of this nature to feed the homeless and give them water and spare blankets if they need it. These are people who have just, like, been kicked out of their homes from foreclosures, from, you know, bankster scams and things of this nature. And then what does the local municipality do? They say feeding the homeless is illegal, and they try and charge the church.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, this is what, yeah, I mean, a lot of people probably join these religious institutions because they are searching for spirituality. They are searching for some deeper meaning to their lives, and that's what the churches pretend to offer them. Well, that is what they do offer them. It is just in what they deliver.
Is it a rose by any other name, though? I mean, I was just thinking about this. It doesn't matter what kind of emblem you wear, whether you're wearing a peace button or Born to Kill, like on a Full Metal Jacket or a crucifix. As long as you're actually just not a douchebag and you're actually doing good things for good people.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a good part of it, isn't it? I mean, that's what you should do. If you're involved in any religion, you should ask yourself, well, what would Jesus do? What would that character that this whole faith is based on do in this situation? Wouldn't he do the right thing?
Maybe that's what's lacking.
If you believe in such things, maybe you don't even believe he existed. Maybe you do, but whatever. You know, the actual basis of the doctrine is good. It always is. All these religions have to base their doctrine on something good as its foundation, because otherwise it wouldn't attract people to begin with. But then they wrap it up in all this other stuff that isn't part of the doctrine. I mean, look at Christianity. It's got very little to do with the teachings of Christ. It's all about this doctrine that's been laid down by the church, which is essentially a corporate control mechanism. That's what it is. I mean, it's got nothing to do. It's everything that Christ was speaking out against, you know, when he overturned the tables of the money changers and all this sort of stuff.
Which was incidentally the only time that he went to church.
Exactly. He was a rebel. He didn't want anything to do with the church. He didn't want anything to do with organized religion. He didn't want anything to do with any of that stuff. That's what he was trying to say. And then people started doing what he said, so they thought, well, shit, we better grab this and wrap it up in a doctrine and feed it to the people as a control mechanism. Mm. And that's what they've done. It's got nothing to do with the teachings of Christ, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's like in the movies, for example, when they do historical films based upon real events and stuff like that, what they do is they have what they call composite characters, where you have three completely different people who did totally different stuff, who they just basically mold into being this one character. Usually the central protagonist.
Well, I've often speculated that could well be what Christ was. You know, I mean, I know I may upset a lot of people by saying that, but you've got to be objective. You've got to look at all of this stuff.
Yeah, it's like, bro, I wasn't there. I can't be sure.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I wasn't there. I can't make the call. But I can look at the lives of certain people, such as there was a Titus Flavius was one character, Roman Emperor Titus Flavius, and there's another guy called Apollonius of Tyana, and then there's this guy, the rebel priest out of the Dead Sea Scrolls. And if you get those three people and you wrap them all together, you come up with a very, very tidy Jesus Christ. And I think that's an interesting concept as well, because he doesn't seem to have any history outside the Bible. There just doesn't seem to be any history for this guy in any of the contemporary history books at the time. So, I don't know, even a lot of the disciples, you know, like John and all this sort of stuff, I mean, and Simon, I can't find any history for a lot of these people in contemporary history books. So I wonder, you know. I mean, it's an interesting story, and we'll never know. We can only speculate. But like I said, when I look at the fruit of religion, I don't think the fruit that it's borne has been anything that we would see as beneficial to mankind. Look at the damage that it's done to indigenous cultures around the planet. Look at what it did to shamanistic traditions all throughout the world, and millions of people that died throughout the Inquisition. And I mean, it's been shocking what it's done. And you know, it's
like all great powers. Some scumbag gets a hold of it and uses it against people when it's supposed to be used to help people.
Well, it's disconnected people from themselves. It's disconnected them from their own spirituality, from their own sexuality, from everything that is beneficial to themselves, and everything that we may be here to learn about ourselves. Religion takes care of all of that for you and wraps you up in cotton wool and says all you got to do is do what it says on this list and you're going to be fine.
Sounds kind of like fragmented mind control to me, you know, where you split the mind into certain personalities and then use trigger words. Jesus!
Yeah, well, it is. It's done terrible things to human consciousness. It really has, and I can't see it as anything beneficial. I think that
let's take it in its whole holistic context, shall we? Let's say, for example, I believe in Jesus Christ. I believe in the power of Jesus Christ. I'm not 100% sure, because I wasn't there, if he was a real dude or something. But there've been times just the belief in the word alone has given strength to my legs that wouldn't ordinarily be there, because I was collapsed in a heap. And I think that's because when you have nothing left, you call out to a higher power and hope like hell that it gives you the strength to continue, more or less. It's a crisis thing. And this is what happens in POW camps. The atheists die first. Because when they're trapped with no hope of rescue, they're really trapped with no hope of rescue. The hardcore Christians won't. Why? Because they're never alone in that cell by themselves, and they're never without hope of salvation. And that's just the belief in and of itself, not even taking anything else into account. That's the power of human belief. That's why I'm starting to wonder, does it really matter actually what you believe in, or does it truly matter what your actions are?
Well, I think, you know, it's a matter of belief in a higher power. I mean, I believe in a higher power. I don't believe in Christianity at all. I don't believe in any religion, but I'm not an atheist. I believe in God, just not in what people would see as a normal concept of God. I don't believe it's some guy with a big beard sitting up there looking down and watching everything I do with a list of things that he doesn't want me to do.
Which is ironic, because that's what you look like.
Yeah, well, but I don't think it's any of that. I mean, I think, you know, if you listen to some of the shows that I've done, like The Energetic Universe and some of the stuff that I talked about in my film, The Awakening, I mean, I think that it's an energetic universe, and I think the energy that all is created from is itself conscious. This is what I believe. And this is through experiences that I've had myself through meditation and certain connections that I've made, and I've just connected to this energetic field at times. And so for me, it has relevance, and this is what I've attempted to share with people. So I believe there's a higher power, and I believe that everything happens for a reason, and I'm able to accept any position that I'm in through my life. It's all part of the ride. There's nothing that can really happen that can affect me. It may affect my body, but it won't affect me because my consciousness is eternal. This is just a vessel that it's using to experience this reality for a little while, you know. So, you know, I have particular views that get me through most situations, you know, and they're very, very spiritual, highly spiritual views, and I feel very connected to what you would probably call God, but it isn't anything that you could define by any religious sense.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So
I'd say the closest thing I could discover to God is, there's two visions of it. One, he kind of looks like me, kind of sounds like me, but he's not me. There's no frickin' way he's me, because he's perfect in every way, you know, like the Mary Poppins version of Vinnie Eastwood, practically perfect in every way. And like, totally knows everything, and is just basically is a real pain in the ass, because it's something
that
you
could...
sounds
just like you, Vinnie.
It sounds just
like you, mate. Perfect, but a real pain in the ass. Now, look, you are perfect, Vinnie. You're perfect Vinnie Eastwood.
Let me finish. Because I'm not perfect. I'm flawed. I'm just perfect at this impression of Vinnie Eastwood, which is currently flawed and being built and very, very slowly put together, like a giant pyramid which will eventually enslave my freedom and myself. Anyway, it's basically better than me in every way, right? Not perfect. But better than me in absolutely everything, in a point where I could never hope to achieve it, all right? And that's my higher self. And the reason why I can never achieve it is because that's the whole point, is because you never achieve perfection. There's no point in actually trying to say, I will obtain it someday. It's actually just something to strive for and never achieve, to constantly remind you that you're still human and you're not a god, so that you don't run away with yourself.
Well, yeah, but you still are perfect, Vinny. You're perfect at being you with all of your flaws, because the flaws that you have give you the unique perspective of reality that you have.
Oh, yeah, but I'm not talking about my flaws.
No,
I'm talking about my ceiling.
No, but no one can have that perspective that you've got better than you. No one can see the world better than you can from your eyes. So you're perfect at being you, and being you is what you came here to be, obviously, because that's who you are. You're here to gain the experience of reality from the perspective of Vinnie Eastwood, with all of your flaws and imperfections, because reality needs to understand reality from that perspective. It needs to understand it from every perspective.
Yeah, that's what holism is about.
Well, you're like a thought in the mind of God. This is what everybody is, you see. So, and what you're here is to make a difference. You've got to have the choice to go wrong. You've got to have evil's got to be in the world. You've got to have the choice to do the ultimate evil, because otherwise, how do you have that choice not to do that? How do you have the choice to go right if you don't have the choice to go wrong? You've got to have that choice, because otherwise there's no reason for it. There's no reason for the experience. It's what you do with the time. It's what your legacy is that you leave behind. What you strive for, the perfection. But what is perfection? Perfection is simply being all that you can be with the tools that you've been given for the experience, and experiencing life to the fullest of your potential, and leaving a legacy behind for others, and improving reality by your presence in it. And you've got every tool you need to do that, so you are perfect. And that's what it's about, you know. Like, this is what it's about for everybody. We've been taken away from all that. We've been given this idea that it's supposed to be what it says in this book, but it's not. It's not about that at all. It's about you. It's about your unique expression of creation and what you do with that time. And everybody is perfect. They're all perfect at being themselves. It's just that we're trained to measure ourselves by parameters that are not our own. And so we never view ourselves as the perfect expressions of creation that we are. You know, but we are. We are all perfect, Vinny. Everybody is perfect. It's just that we're taught that perfection isn't us, it's something else. It's something that we have to strive to be when we already are. We are all everything we could ever want to be, and we have the potential to be everything we could be if we simply understood how reality works and simply understood what we are. And this is the danger of religion. This is what religion has more than anything taken away from people, and that's why we've got a world that's in the state that it's in today. It's almost a direct result of the mind fuck that is religion, you know?
I completely agree. And my other thought of what God might be is the latent psionic energy within all living things. And mind you, I think science has discovered that matter itself is conscious. It changes when you observe it.
Of course it is. Yeah. Everything is conscious because everything's made of energy, and the energy itself is conscious, Vinny. Yeah. There is no matter. The measurement problem has shown that. There is no matter. It's an illusion. The whole lot's an illusion.
Yeah, well, that's what they found in the Large Hadron Collider. They're like $8 billion, four countries. What's the whole idea of this? Well, to find out where we all come from. But don't we already know? Kind of thing. No. But we want to find out how the universe came from. You want to find the God particle? Really, the God particle? What's the potential risk of this? Well, we could potentially create a black hole and kill everybody on Earth and probably the entire our half of the galaxy, but we're going to do it anyway. So they do this experiment. They crash two particles together at virtual light speed, and they explode, and they do create a new kind of matter that disappeared instantly and had absolutely no practical use, and they called it doesn't matter.
Ah, lovely. But look, Vinny, this is the ultimate in left brain activity. You see that they're looking for the God particle. They're looking for the particle that contains consciousness. They want to find out how they can get chemicals and rocks and minerals and mix it all together and create life. Now, we can already create life through procreation. The sexes.
I see a lot of people alive walking around and were dumb as a rock already, bro. I'm not sure if they're going to achieve their goals, you know.
but they're trying to find a particle. They believe it all comes from particle. They don't understand the energy itself is conscious. You know, there is no matter. You know, look at the measurement problem. You know, a scientist goes to measure an atom, and he can't measure the atom because the electrons are infinite. They exist everywhere at once. It isn't until he goes to measure the atom that they coalesce to create the atom. The electrons make the conscious choice to become that atom so he can measure the atom, right? So Newtonian physics breaks down right at that point. It breaks down at the singularity. So they've got this whole ridiculous scientific system they've based on Newtonian physics, which breaks down at the singularity. They can't even explain what an atom is, and yet they're going to create a hadron collider and spend billions of dollars bombarding particles together looking for the God particle. Well, they know that the physics doesn't work anyway because they can't even understand what an atom is. They can't even explain an atom, and they know the measurement problem's real. I mean, these people are insane.
Yeah.
They just can't admit that the energy itself is conscious. There's only actually one of us here. It's just different frequencies of consciousness inhabiting different vessels to experience consciousness from that unique perspective, which is perfect and unique to that frequency.
Yeah.
That is what's going on here. You know, and they've just lost the plot, and they're destroying the planet trying to figure out where life comes from. It's madness. It's completely and utterly insane, you know. And we used to know all this. This is where all the shamanistic traditions, this is where they all start from. They start from the perspective that we're connected to everything. And we've tried to destroy everything, and scientists are just trying to figure out now, gee, we might be connected to everything, you know. I mean, it's absurd. We've done everything backwards. And that's why the world's in the state that it's in, you know. I mean, the Hadron Collider is a prime example of left brain stupidity. How far we are willing to go, and just how stupid these scientists are. When all these guys know about the measurement problem, they know it breaks down at the singularity. They know the physics is flawed. Why the hell?
But they know that the people who have money to fund their crazy schemes don't know that.
I don't know what it is, mate, but they're insane. They're completely insane. I mean, the Hadron Collider proves that they're insane, you know?
Well, you know, never underestimate a man's ability to play mind games with himself and win. We'll be right back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. This is a proxy meeting with Max Egan and Jordan Maxwell, who has an awful connection, so he's mostly just sitting in and listening to this one, and we'll probably redo this again later on down the track when he's got his equipment. By the way, JordanMaxwellShow.com, not JordanMaxwell.com. JordanMaxwellShow.com is where you can go to donate to help replace Jordan's belongings, which just burnt to the ground in a warehouse this morning, the day that they were supposed to be shipped to his home. You can't make this stuff up, folks. You know, I believe in synchronicity. I don't really believe in coincidence. You know, the two are very mutually exclusive, you know, like religion and spirituality. We do have Max Egan with a great connection, on the other hand. Welcome back, brother. Now, I wanted to make a comment to you, and I want to sort of pass on an observation my bandmate Mike made. He said he listened to a presentation you did or an interview you were where you were – he'd never heard you swear before in his life. And he was like amazed to hear it. It's like you were really worked up or something. Do you recall? Because I don't think I've seen it.
Look, no, I don't. It might have been on the round table discussion with Kate of Gaia a couple of weeks ago. I think
that might have been it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that was a kind of a very open round table sort of a thing. So yeah, dropped a few there. I didn't have to use the radio voice for that one, you know. So
yeah. Well, you know, it happens sometimes, and I get to the point where I don't know about you, but the vast amount of my cussing happens when technical issues happen, you know, behind the scenes when nobody's watching, when nobody's listening. It's kind of like masturbation or voting for Reagan, you know. Everybody does it, but they try to keep it away from everybody else, and they deny that they do it anyway.
Well, I swear like a trooper. People probably wouldn't think that, but I do. I keep it very calm for the radio because I got to speak across American talk radio, and it actually goes out on normal radio, on FM radio, AM radio. So, you know, I've got to keep it down because they have certain rules in America. If I want the show to go on air, then I have to keep the cussing down. But in real life, I have no problem with swearing. I'm not offended by swearing. I don't think there's any words that you can say or any sound you can make with your mouth is so evil it's going to send you to hell. You know, I think all of this stuff is an illusion.
Well, how do you explain Justin Bieber?
I don't know how anyone would explain Justin Bieber. What's going on with Justin Bieber?
I mean, talking about like a sound that takes you straight to hell, you know?
Okay, no worries. Well, I'm not actually familiar with Justin Bieber. I couldn't even tell you what one of his songs is. So
yeah. Well, nobody could. And I remember Thomas Sheridan made a comment. You remember back in the day there was the news about Angelina Jolie. She had her breast cut off to prevent herself from getting breast cancer. The very next day, Thomas Sheridan puts up a post saying he's having his ears amputated just in case Justin Bieber puts out another album.
Yeah, well, that sounds like about the same mentality that Angelina Jolie employed. How terrible was that? I mean, I've got the gene which may lead to cancer, so I'm going to have my breasts removed. This is absolute insanity, you know. And what I was promoting as well with the kids, more programming for the kids, of course.
Yeah, here's my idol. She's so pretty, and she looks really nice with her fake ones now.
I don't know Angelina Jolie. I mean, she's a strange looking woman.
Yeah, she's got lips like a fish tank.
I don't know whether she's pretty. I don't know whether you'd call her that, but yeah, interesting.
Jordan, I heard you in the background there. Are you vocal? Oh, not quite. Right, never mind. Now, the other element here I was wanting to talk about in terms of pop culture, and you know, culture, people don't really pick the word cult out of there. you know, I think you really should, because if it's part of the culture, there's probably a cult involved somewhere, a cult of some kind, whether it be a cult of personality or a pedophile cult or something nasty like that. This whole system is a conditioning system, right? That it's like there's an old saying in medieval times, when collecting firewood, you were able to collect it either by hook or by crook, meaning if it was a dangling dry branch or something like that off of a tree and you could hook it down, you could keep that firewood, or by crook, meaning you could steal it. And so what's happening now, I think, is society has been fashioned to a point where you get brainwashed by hook or by crook. Either you one of the low-hanging fruit and you're quite easy to manipulate at the time, or you are quite resistant and you'll get directly fracked over at some point.
Oh, absolutely. And pop culture is specifically designed to do this. I mean, just the iPhone culture, the whole, you know, you've got to have the latest exploding shoes and the latest, you know, iPad and the latest this and the latest that, or you're a lesser person. There's a lot of this goes on, and it's all programming, the whole lot of it. It's all designed to break down the family unit, to separate people from themselves, to separate people from each other. Even when you look at the whole iPad, iPhone culture, the texting culture, it's created a smaller world in many regards, because we're now able to communicate with people across vast distances. But it's also taken people away from hands-on communication. People have a great, you know, deal of difficulty making eye contact with each other anymore. A lot of young kids, they will sit across the room and text each other rather than actually talk to each other. So they're losing their essential life skills. There was one school that was even suggesting they should stop teaching handwriting to students, because they can just type now on their iPads and on their computers. They don't need to learn how to write. So they're digitizing everything, you know, putting all of our knowledge in a digital reality, separating us more and more from real reality, you know. And that's what pop culture is designed to do. It's very dangerous, very insidious. It's all programming. You know, it's all indoctrination and programming, all leading towards transhumanism, all designed to break down the family unit, separate people from themselves, separate them from each other, get them locked into this virtual reality where they can be more easily controlled. That's what it's all about. That's the direction it's going.
Jordan, can you hear us? Are you there? I thought I heard him shuffling around. Okay, he's going to be the silent partner, which is going to channel the ghost of Jordan Maxwell. Well, I think that... No, I can't do it. Okay. I was thinking about this. All right. If you think about pop culture, let's think about influences. How much of an influence is it going to put on you? And here's a question. If you're going to be thinking about how much pop culture influences people, how many different sources have you got? Okay. Are you talking to people who are tattoo artists? You know, and figure out what kind of tattoos people are getting, for example. I have. And guess what they're telling me? You've got people coming in off the street with a frickin' image that they got off Google Images, and they say, I want that one. You go, well, hold on a second, bro. That's not going to look good for your entire life. You know, that's kind of a bit, you know, current, and it's not something that's timeless. You're going to regret that in like, maybe a couple of years. No. I want that one. Are you sure? I could design you something that's actually more your style and personalized and not mass-produced and totally mind-numbingly brainwashed and stupid and a big mistake in your life? No. I want that one. You can't make this stuff up, bro. And it's like, just that one example shows you the exact effect of mass mind control. There is no thought, all right? It's like remote control.
Well, yeah, that's what people do. That's what people do. No thought. You've got to have what everybody else has got. You've got to have the latest exploding shoes. It's what it's all about, you know. And it's all done through pop culture. It's all programming. It's been interesting, actually, when I went over to the third world countries, I saw the pop culture there. It's like 20 years behind where we are at the moment, and you can see how they're conditioning people to become where we are now, you know. It's interesting to see all the stuff they don't sell. As the pop culture changes, all the old products they don't sell, they ship all this stuff off to the third world, and then they promote that pop culture there so they can get rid of all their old stock, you know. That's interesting.
Well, it's sort of like the dregs, right? There's a saying that I have is that there's no creativity left in Hollywood. Everything's just reintroduced, remanufactured, repackaged, and retitled ideas, right?
Well, yeah, it's all dregs, but it's also there's been a process that's been used. It's been a gradual process that's been used to disconnect us from nature, disconnect us from ourselves, disconnect us from the earth, and they do this as they go into third world countries.
You're probably right, Max. Imagine if people went suddenly from having no running water and no electricity to having a smartphone in a year. Okay.
Yeah, you know, it wouldn't work. You've got to lead them through the Transformers stuff so they get used to the machine culture and all. See, like you go to South America now, Transformers are huge. Right, this is stuff that we were doing 20, 30 years ago because it gets people into that machine culture. You know what I mean?
Well, then again, Transformers are just releasing a new line of movies and things like that and a resurgence of the toy community.
No, but even with the Batman and stuff, but you go there, the Batman stuff in South America is the old yellow label and the old Batman in the grey suit and all that sort of stuff, you know? So it's all that you've got to lead them towards this new modern version of stuff. It's a gradual process of disconnection that takes place over a couple of generations. And that's why they do it. It's a program. You know, it's all programming. It's all done in a specific way for a specific reason because that's how you disconnect them. Like you say, you could go into a tribal culture now and give them a smartphone and a MacBook and an iPad and electricity and solar power, and they would not know what to do with it. It wouldn't mean anything to them. Within a month, they'd be back living in the jungle. So you've got to gradually disconnect them through little trinkets along the way and gradually remold their way of thinking over a couple of generations. And that's why it's been done that way.
To lead people
down a machine path and down a transhumanist path, you've got to gradually introduce this machine culture into their minds. Yeah, because left brain is very, very different to the way these native cultures live. These are very, very right brain, very earth-connected cultures. So it's a process, you know.
I mean, it would be quite interesting. I'd like to use the Dune analogy, you know. They don't value gold or spice. They value water.
Yeah.
You know? And what happens is, I think cultural, what was it called? Social engineering. It's got a game plan, right? And I was just thinking about it as you were saying this, and this might be an important thought. Decades. The 70s is the decade of permissive activity, and you can tell that because somebody can tell you any story about anything wild and crazy they did in the 70s, and it's totally excusable because it was the 70s. And then you had the bad fashion and the sort of latent rebellious stage of the 80s with the Kurt Cobains and Nirvanas and bad hair and bad fashion and all of that kind of stuff. So it actually distorts people's idea of what looking attractive is. So you've distorted what they permit in terms of behavior. Then you've distorted what they like in terms of appearance. And then in the 90s, what else did they manage to distort? They managed to distort our connections with our communities. All right, this is when all the telephone, this is when the internet really started coming in. And in the 2000s, I see what has happened is it's almost like you go away and you separate everybody out, and then you bring in a big event to bring them back together, right? Like 9/11. And then the rest of it, after you've brought them all back together again, you need to bring them back together for the wrong reasons and then separate them further and further and further from each other. Not specifically stretching them further from each other, because as you say, we've got all this communications technology, but physically from each other and make us learn, make us react to digital communications, text messaging, as though it's real human interaction. The body, I think, reacts very, very differently when you've got a person in front of you that you can hug and the vibes that they put off and what have you than you do from a text message. And I think that connection with real people is what they sought to deprive us of. And I think what's happening now is people have actually grown aware to that because we've gotten the technology to figure out what this game plan is and how long and slow the social engineers have been playing it out. And now we're experiencing a resurgence and people going back the other way and making it more about connectivity and ironically using the technology that was brought out to keep us apart to bring us back together again.
Well, yeah, I mean, we've been played. I mean, people have really been played because, I mean, they disconnected everybody. They promised you all of this sort of stuff, and it turned into a huge schmozzle. And then people were just waiting for society to implode. So they promised you this big event like 2012. The world's going to change in 2012. So people are all distracted, not doing anything about it, waiting for the world to change. Another external source is going to come. You know, this is like another savior. 2012 was almost like a religious experience for people waiting for this event to happen, you know. So, and then it didn't happen, so people are left running around going, what was the big non-event? What was that all? They're all disillusioned and all sorts of stuff. So, yeah, there's all sorts of social engineering that happens, Vinny, all along the way.
I had a 2012 party. We watched the movie 2012 and watched everybody get wiped out and stuff, drinking beer and smoking cigarettes. It was fantastic. You know, and I think that's actually the approach I take to most things. If somebody says, oh, something's going to happen at such and such a date, you know, whether that be gas prices, economic crash, blah, 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 whatever the hell the end of the world is, my instant reaction is, and my plausible reaction is just to deny it straight up offhand and go, no, it's not going to happen. There's no such thing as freaking doomsday. Now, if at one point I happen to be incorrect, then it actually is doomsday. But here's the benefit. I didn't spend my fricking life worrying about it.
Well, that's the thing. You know, people spend their lives worrying about it, and they're distracted. They're thinking the world's going to change through nothing that they have to participate in. You know, I don't have to do anything to fix the world because it's all going to change in 2012. Everything's going to change. You know, we're going to have big geological changes, earth changes, all this stuff's going to happen. It's a new religion. It's salvation coming from an external source. I don't have to do anything to address the government. I don't have to do anything to address the problems or anything to deal with my own lack of spiritual prowess because the world's going to change. You know, something's going to happen. A comet's going to come. Jesus is going to come. Someone's going to save things for me. I'm going to wake up one day and someone's going to go, look, everything's different now and you didn't have to do a damn thing, you know. That's what all of this stuff is designed to do. You know, don't do anything. It's all, like all these people say, disclosure's coming. Disclosure's coming. They're going to let you know about all the aliens. It's all happening. It's imminent. It's imminent. Don't rock the boat. It's all coming. You know, don't do anything. Wait. Something's going to happen which is going to change your reality for you. You don't have to participate. That's what all of it's about. It's all distraction, and it's all designed to lead people away from themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, and if we were disempowerment. If we absolutely disempowerment, if we learn to pay attention to who and what we are and simply turn and face this system, in one day we could change things. If humanity would simply step up to the plate and step into the power that they've got, it's just that they've been trained to believe they don't have any.
Yeah.
But they do, you know.
It's the old learned helplessness thing, you know. If you, I don't know what this fish analogy is, you know, teach a man to fish, he'll feed his thing for a lifetime. Not if the frickin' Fukushima stuff makes all the fish radioactive, it don't.
Well, yeah, there's that going on as well. Mate, we've got a lot of issues to deal with, Vinny, we really do.
You know, and in fact, there's too many. And I had a listener who's actually just kind of starting to wake up and that kind of thing. I just had a conversation with him on Skype. He was texting me on Facebook, and he sounded like in a real bad way. And I said, bro, what's your Skype? So I gave him a ring. And he's not feeling too good about it, man. He's like, what can I do? How can I help, et cetera, et cetera. And I go, well, hold on a second, mate. You're going too fast. You're going too fast. First of all, is every single problem in the world your fault? No. So, knowing that it's not all your fault, is it all your responsibility? No. What is your fault and what is your responsibility? Only what you do in your own life, son. Don't take responsibility for others if you haven't taken responsibility for yourself. And that way it relieves a hell of a lot of burden and just replaces it with responsibility, which is what the burden should really ideally embody.
Well, you know, we've got to be prepared to take this system on, but we've got to know who we are in order to do it. And that's the thing. You know, people, they want to get violent or angry or whatever with the system. And I suggest that people just ask the right questions in the right way, know who and what you are, and stand in your power. But you've got to have community to be able to do it. We need united community. See, everything about this system is designed to keep us divided from each other, and that's the problem, you know. See, really, when you look at everything that we face, I've said this a million times on shows. You know, like you look at Fukushima, you look at the wars, the starvation, the homelessness, the money situation, religious division, everything that we've got on this planet, every problem that we face really ultimately becomes from legislation that's been enacted by governments. You know, we've got a disempowered population which has allowed these governments to just keep enacting legislation, which has allowed corporate corruption. It's allowed things like Fukushima to take place. It's allowed the coal seam gas mining to take place, all of this stuff. And all of this happens because we don't know who we are because we live in divided societies. You know, if we can rediscover ourselves and respect ourselves enough to respect the people around us and stand up as one united community, we can hold our public trustees accountable. We can change the direction the ship of state is sailing in. It's all got to come down to respect, you know, and that comes down to inner work. This is why they've created religion to hijack your own spiritual prowess away from you.
Same as Freemasonry.
Well, yeah, it all teaches you to give your power to something external. If you can change your perspective of who and what you are and respect yourself and see the perfection of yourself, like I said, you know, you're perfect at being Vinnie Eastwood. You're perfect at being you. And once you realize that about yourself and you see that in others, then the barriers between you and these other people break down. You realize that we're all in this together. We're all simply, you know, having our different perspective. That's what we're here for. You know, where's all the division? Where's it all come from? It's a result of this society. It's all fiction.
That's a good point.
It's all fiction. Yeah. It's all fiction. All of the division is fiction. It's all just there because we're measuring ourselves to external parameters. And once we've got this respect for each other, we could stand up and hold our public trustees accountable. In one day, we could change the direction this world's going in. So there's your solution right there. Respect yourself. That's it. Once you can do that, you know, because if you don't respect people around you, then it's because you don't respect yourself. You don't know yourself properly. That's the problem, you know.
Yeah.
And this is all from a loss of spirituality. A lot of it is because of religion that we're in this state, you know. So, I mean, to me, that's the solution, Vinny. The solution is for us to respect ourselves enough to respect our community because then we can change the world in a day.
And the words of Ice Cube, you better check yourself before you wreck yourself.
Well, yeah, you know, but I mean, people just can't see it. They can't see the forest for the trees. I mean, one thing Einstein said that was great was two things are infinite, you know, the universe and human stupidity, though I'm not sure about the former.
Yeah, I think that's about right. And here's the other thing. I had an important thought the other day. I want to hear your thoughts on it, Max. Is this compassion and love. Why don't people mention that when they talk about human nature? Why are they always talking about greed and war and scumbaggery when they mention human nature? Because aren't they kind of equal part and parcel?
Well, yeah, they are. Compassion is so important. I believe compassion to be the fabric that makes up reality. If you could translate the energetic fabric of the universe into an emotion, it would be compassion. Because, you know, an object, atoms must have compassion for each other to stick together into an object. They must have compassion and empathy for each other. You know, everything is based in compassion. For an object to even be a solid object, it must have compassion. Compassion is a fabric that binds reality together. To me, that's the feeling that I got one day from meditation, from just an experience I had.
You know, that reminds me, ironically, of a church putting a sign out the front that said, "Don't trust atoms; they make up everything."
They do. They do. They absolutely do. That's a good one. But, you know, compassion is extremely important, Vinny. It is. I mean, compassion is everything. Compassion is what binds reality together.
Yeah. Well, see, I've been delving into, like, this kind of what's the real difference between a narcissist and a psychopath, right? You know, I mean, I've acknowledged that I'm kind of like a benign narcissist, you know, like Muhammad Ali or Bruce Lee, you know, real talented, real freaking onto it, really want to help people. But at the end of the day, I'm a little bit selfish, you know. But I think my good things make up for my bad things all over it, because I'm perfect, as you say. And I'm just thinking, like, what are the parameters? What is it that psychopaths possess that I don't? Or rather, here's a better idea. What do I possess that a psychopath doesn't have? Because psychopaths don't have things that I don't. I've got things that they don't. Like, I've got creativity. I've got love. I've got compassion. Okay?
You've got empathy.
Mm-hmm.
A psychopath doesn't have empathy. So even when you look at a psychopath, you can't if you really want to be objective and really be responsible about it, I mean, you look at a psychopath, you can't even say that what they're doing is consciously evil sometimes, because they don't have empathy. They have no concept of the pain and damage that they cause to people. Maybe they do. I don't know. Maybe they enjoy it. But, you know, if you don't have empathy, it isn't like, I mean, you don't feel empathy for a cow in a slaughterhouse. Someone doesn't feel empathy for these animals when they're killing them and slaughtering them. You don't feel empathy for ants that you're spraying in the garden. It's the same sort of thing. They just don't feel the same way as we do. So are they being consciously evil? It's an interesting perspective, you know, if you really want to be objective about it. But they if they're not able to feel empathy, then how do they know what right and wrong is, you know?
Well, I was thinking about just the other day that we inherently know what right and wrong is, because there's a feeling, right? You know, like, this is wrong, man.
Well, we do.
Yeah. And
because we have empathy.
Yeah, and that's basically the well thing. I mean, do you have a conscience or do you not? If you don't have a conscience, you will not instinctively know right from wrong. You'll know right from wrong, but it won't be because you feel it. It's because you've learned how people react to when you do certain things.
Exactly. You find psychopaths have kind of two-dimensional eyes, and they recognize each other. And they always, they're very charismatic, and they rise to power. They always manage to rise to positions of power, and they award power to psychopaths beneath them in the food chain. This is why we've got this psychopathic system. We've got this psychopathic society, you know. Because, and this is a lot of the thing that the shamans used to do as well. This is why I believe the church went to so much trouble to wipe out shamanistic traditions, because shaman used to weed out the psychopaths in the society. They used to recognize them, and they'd make sure these people never got to positions of power. And that's why the church went to such extraordinary efforts to wipe out shaman. Because it's a psychopathic system, and with the shaman, if they're in control of the villages and control of the cultures, or at least observing the cultures or watching over them, then they make sure the psychopaths don't get to positions of power. It's a big clue in that thing. Why the shaman have come out and they're trying to re-educate people back to their old ways, you know?
We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Max Egan and the ghost of Jordan Maxwell. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the final segment with Max Egan and Jordan Maxwell. Max Egan's website is thecrowhouse.com, and Jordan's website is jordanmaxwellshow.com. I know you haven't been listening and being able to hear Jordan because his connection's real bad, but he can hear us and going through the conversation. We will, of course, redo this over again once Jordan gets his equipment and whatnot. And if you want to help out with that, just bear in mind all his belongings just burnt to ground in a warehouse this morning, and he needs to be able to get back up on his feet. You know, just simple things like a clothes, computer, and a microphone. You know, and just those few things that you need to recover costs like $5,000. You know, so please go to jordanmaxwellshow.com today and give very, very generously as well. The man's 74 years old, and he's having to go through all of this kind of stuff. That's hard to deal with when you're a young fella. All right, so this is what we're talking about when we talk about empathy and compassion for people. Max Egan, welcome back, sir.
Thanks for having me back, Vinny.
Now, can I ask you something? I haven't travelled much, and you've travelled a lot recently. What's it like? You know, I mean, in terms of vibes, or how different is it to just your normal life? It's about as different as it can possibly get, isn't it?
Well, you know, everywhere you go, really, I mean, there you are. I mean, everywhere is much the same as everywhere else in that respect. Everywhere is as good as the people that you know. And everywhere that I went, I found pockets of resistance all over the world. I found people that are awake. Maybe it's just because of what I do and they're the type of people that I attract, but everywhere I went, I found pockets of resistance all over the world. But I found that it's the same. I mean, they're trying to turn the world into everywhere else. You know, they turn everywhere into everywhere else. If they find a place that people like to go to, then they quickly turn it into everywhere else. So everywhere you go, you find the same restaurants, the same takeaway stores. You can buy the same products. It's all the same, you know. They're trying to homogenize everything. And that's something that I very much noticed. And especially in the third world, they're desperately trying to exploit the third world and turn it into the same as everywhere else, you know. But they're about to transfer wealth into the third world. So they've basically exploited the first world as much as they can now. So we're seeing a massive amount of economic crisis happen in the first world. We're all, you know, experiencing economic hardship in Australia, New Zealand, America, England, everywhere. And they're transferring wealth into the third world because that will disconnect these families in the third world. So the families in the first world are very disconnected now. We're all very superficial. We're all based on, you know, heavily locked into the economic model. You find the third world families are still very connected. The family units are still very connected. So now they introduce iPhones and all the pop culture and the iPads and the technology, the computers, and get them all up to speed. And this will disconnect these family units over a period of one or two generations, and then they'll have the whole world disconnected from the earth. That's what it's all about. That's really what they're trying to do. That's a lot of what tourism seems to be about, and everything it's all about. It's just turning everywhere into everywhere else, making it into one big department store. You know, that's what they're trying to do with the planet, really.
Bro, do you know what New Zealand's number one earner is?
What's that, mate?
Tourism.
Well, there you go. Yeah.
Yeah, sounds about right to me, mate. I mean, you know, you have a look around this country and it's like, okay, what happened in 1 month? Well, we signed up to NATO. We gave the US Coast Guard control of our waters. And also we gave the Reserve Bank a new chairman from the World Bank and gave him sweeping new powers over the economy. That happened in a month.
You know, yeah.
Like during 2012 or something like that, I recall. And
it's all based on the economy, though, isn't it? We base the value of our countries and the worth of our countries on its economic prowess, you know? It's all economics. You know, we've got to do whatever's good for the economy. Yeah, screw the economy. The economy is fiction. It's digits on a screen. It doesn't mean anything. You know, what's real is the people. What's happening to the people in order to balance these books, you know? That's what people don't think about. You know, they all think the economic model is real. It's pathological thinking. It's a psychic pathogen that's been superimposed over reality, this economic mindset that we have, you know?
Well, I think it's the hierarchical mindset, bro. Basically, like, there's certain people with power and certain people without, and that I don't know, you're all scum and you got nothing, and I'm everything, you know? Just basically, they don't care.
This is what I refer to as the social pathogen. I say there's three pathogens that control society. The economic pathogen, the social pathogen, which is the hierarchical nature of our society and our business structure and everything that you've just gone through, and then the religious pathogen, which tells you that it's all okay. You've got to be discarded. You've got to turn to hell. Redemption brings salvation, and it's okay. Once you're all thrown on the trash heap, then Superman's going to come down and save you anyway, so it's all good. You have to let it go into the trash heap because it says in the book here that it has to turn into a trash heap. So it's pathological thinking. You know, we support this economic model in order to climb rungs on the social ladder, and we get discarded and it's all okay according to the religious model, see? So these three pathogens control our thinking and they control Western society. And they're all programs, you know?
Well, I think it's kind of like, I remember a diagram in high school where you had this three-tiered cake, and on each tier was like the elite, the bankers, the military, and then all the serfs and peasants down the bottom. I think it might have been describing Russia. And then you just kind of reminded me of that, and it's like, what was it, the economic, sociological, and religious pathogens. So what this one did is it said, we kill you. No, sorry. The peasants were, we provide for you. The military was, we kill you. And the elite were, we rule you. Okay, so you change that up. You turn it into eco, sociological, and religious one. We extort money from you. we tell you that you're not good enough, and we tell you that it's okay. From the economic to the social to the religious. Is that what you're getting at, isn't it?
Well, basically, yeah. I mean, you know, you've got this economic pathogen whereby everything is about money. Everything's about money. You've got people who will come and throw you out of your house because you haven't paid your mortgage, and they feel terrible. I feel terrible. I've got to throw you out of your house. Your family's going to freeze to death. It's the middle of winter. But I have no choice because it says here in this book that the books aren't balanced. You know, you haven't paid your bills. So I'm willing to discard your life, your living flesh, in order to balance these books. This house will sit here empty. No one will be in it. It will just sit there, and you'll be freezing to death out here in the cold in order to support this economic model. I feel terrible about it, but I have no choice because it says here that the books aren't balanced. This pathological thinking, right? And if the books are balanced, well, you'll have a bigger front door than me, so therefore you'll be a more important person than me. You'll have more value than me, so I will mollycoddle to you. I will kowtow to you because if the rung falls out from below me, if I'm nice to you, well, maybe you'll give me a helping hand up because you're obviously a better person than me because you have more stuff than me. You know, we judge ourselves by our stuff, which is not us. It's not who we are. And we're allowing other people to be discarded because they have less stuff than us. They're of less value than us, you know. And then when they get discarded and thrown in the trash heap, yeah, they say, well, it's okay because according to the Bible, it says that it all has to turn to hell so Jesus can come and save me. You know, so it all makes it all okay. You know, as long as you've got a religion, as long as you've got a religion, it's all good. You have faith. The faith will get you through. It's like you said before, you're a stronger person if you've got faith. No, you just believe that some sugar daddy is going to come down and save you. You're not going to take responsibility for yourself. And you never asked yourself in the beginning why the hell you have to pay to be alive in the first place.
Maybe it's not you're a stronger person. It's you can put up with more crap.
Yeah, well, you know, so, but this is the way our society is constructed, and it's pathological thinking. You know, this hierarchical nature, this business structure that we've got. We've got to climb rungs on the business ladder, climb rungs on the social ladder in order to be a better person. That's what it's all about. You value yourself by the stuff that you've collected along the way, and you've usually collected this stuff by exploiting other people and throwing them on the trash heap. You know, so it's completely pathological. This whole society, this whole social structure is pathological. It's based on pathological thinking. It's based on psychopathy. The whole thing. It's a psychopathic system.
Mm.
And it's designed to the system gets ever more efficient and it discards more and more of humanity along the way. It's like the system itself, the meme that everybody believes is real. It's like an energetic life form of its own. And its food is the energy that we give it through our belief that the system is real. You know, but it's just an idea, you know.
Well, they need us in order to continue it. I mean, no machine breaks, no machine keeps running without its fuel source. And it's kind of like we're cattle and they're the predators, you know?
The fuel source is our energy. That's what they harvest. See, people think, oh, it's our money, it's our wealth. No, it's our energy. There is no money. Money is the catalyst that holds the mechanism together. It's the glue that holds the machine together. But there is no wealth. There is no ownership. Ownership's a fraud. You can't own anything. The earth's been here for billions of years. You're here for 50 or 100. You don't own shit. You don't own anything. The earth owns you, you know. But you can't steal the earth. You trick people into believing they own it. You trick people into believing you can own a piece of the earth and enslave them to an economic model which is designed to implode and transfer all wealth into the hands of the people who issue them paper. Then they can own the earth and you'll believe they own it. You know, but you can't own the earth. It's a fiction. It's a lie. So it's a scam. The whole thing is a scam, Vinny. You know? And it's your energy is what they harvest. You know, the time you spend running on the treadmill, the time you spend collecting this paper in order to pay to be alive, that energy itself that you're not spending finding yourself or improving reality or experiencing the art of your life, you're doing what they tell you you got to do in order to pay to be here. That's what they harvest, that energy itself.
Mm. You put a psychopath on a desert island with nobody to subjugate or worship them, they'll freaking die of starvation, even if they got plenty of food and water.
They will, absolutely they will. You know, it's an energy harvest that's going on here, you know, and that's what people need to pay attention to. It's all about energy. The whole universe is created from energy. It's all based on energy. This is what we were saying earlier on about what's so dangerous about the religions and the churches, the energetic state they're putting people in, all these negative energy that they're generating when they go in and pray in these places, because it's all based on negativity. It's all based on the wrong perspective right from the very beginning. So there's all sorts of stuff going on, mate, but it's an energy harvest. That's the most important thing. And that's why it's all about changing your energetic state. That's why when people say if you change the inner world, you can change the outer world. You can. You've got to change your energetic state internally, but then you've got to apply it to the world that you live in. You can't just wander off into a bubble of spiritual or sovereign narcissism, which is what a lot of people do. Think, I'm free now, I'm safe now, screw the rest of the world, they can all go and do whatever they're doing. No, you can't do that. You've got to pay attention to it because this world is what created the need for you to wake up in the first place. It was so negative that it caused you to wake up. Shouldn't you now turn and address that? If you do, with your new energetic state, then you can bring about change. But you've got to apply yourself to it. You can't just wander off in a little bubble of narcissism. You've got to apply yourself to the world you live in. You know, that's what a lot of people are failing to do.
Yeah, and it's funny you should mention that because I was just talking on Facebook today saying how I'm a little bit narcissistic and what have you, and they're like, oh, but Vinny, you're doing the right thing. And I was like, I know, but this is for future reference. If I ever, like, you know, get too full of myself or get too far ahead of myself or something like that, people will be able to dethrone me because I've given them plenty of ammunition to use against me if I ever do something bad, you know? I'm like Superman giving you a kryptonite bullet just in case I get put under mind control, you know what I'm saying?
Well, look, we're all flawed, mate. We all make mistakes. Nobody's perfect. There are no gurus. You know, the only guru is you. You're the only person who can educate yourself. You're the only person you can learn from.
It was another thing I was saying to myself today, bro.
Well, it's true. There are no, and we're all, nobody's perfect. I mean, I hate it when people put me up on a pedestal. I'm not perfect. I'm as messed up as everybody else. You know, I'm just prepared to speak out.
And, oh my God, totally relevant information here.
Well, you know, I'm just prepared to speak out. That's all, that's what it's about. And the point is that I'm not anybody special. That's the whole point in what I do, is that you don't have to be somebody special. Why would you even think that there are special somebodies? Because everybody's just somebody the same as you. Everyone's just the same. We're all in this together. There are no gurus. There are no celebrities. There is nobody more special than anybody else. And all I am is someone who's prepared to speak. And that's all I've ever done. And all I've ever had to offer is my perspective. And hey, I don't always get it right because it's just my perspective. I don't claim to be God or a guru or anything. I make mistakes the same as everybody else. So yeah, all I can give you is my perspective. That's the only thing I'm an authority on is me. So that's all I have to offer. That's all anybody has to offer is their perspective. And it's really important that people take that into account when listening to any researcher, is to understand that they're offering you their perspective based on the information that they've had access to and what they've done with that information, how they've interpreted that information. So, you know, take with it what you will. If you find the information you get from these people empowering, something that you can help to improve your own life and improve reality around you, then take it on board by all means. But don't think anybody has got your answers for you because you are the only one who can possibly have those answers, you know. It's an individual thing.
Yeah. And also, I found an interesting thing. Most truths in life are usually a cruel irony, right? And here's another cruel irony of life for you, ladies and gentlemen. Vinny's daily cruel irony. Devoted, loving fans and the people who praise you all the time are the most likely to turn viciously on you for no reason. Have you ever noticed that, Max?
Oh, yeah, I've had that. Absolutely.
Oh my God, I love you. I agree with everything that you do. I hate you. You're a clone, you know?
Oh, yeah. I've had people that have done that. Like, they've sent me an email, and I've responded to the email. And because I've responded, they've suddenly thought, oh, this guy's my best friend. And then because I don't respond to every message they send me, suddenly they hate me. And I get 200-300 emails a day sometimes. I mean, I can't respond to all these emails. And this happens. It puts you off responding to any of them because... Hang on, if I respond, suddenly the person may think that I've singled them out as somebody special and now I'm going to have to respond all the time. And sometimes these people will send you 10 or 15 emails in a day, and if you don't respond, then you're the worst person in the world. I've literally had that happen to me, which is very strange. It's a strange mentality for people to have, but this does happen.
I think it's desperation because they're alone, man. They're alone, just like we were.
It does, and they want a friend, and they're so excited when you do respond to them, and they think, wow, I've found a friend. and they listen to the shows and go, well, listen to what he says. I can actually trust this guy. But then they don't understand that you've got a life. You're doing all this other stuff, and it takes time, and you simply don't have the physical time to sit there and respond to all of these people. And I value all of them. I care about all of them. But I simply can't respond to everybody who writes to me, you know. It's just not possible, you know.
Well, I think what Andrew Bartzis did to this one is he just said, okay, if you want my knowledge and if you want me to do your readings and everything like that, cough up with the money, okay? You know, otherwise I'm not going to really bother. And, you know, on the one hand, you're like, oh, well, that's a bit capitalistic of you. And on the other hand, you're like, you know, too frickin' right. If you're going to give your time to other people and you don't have to do it, and it's actually stressful and painful for you sometimes, and actually does take a lot out of you, why shouldn't you get some kind of compensation?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't certainly think...
I'm not recommending that you or I do that, because we're not exactly that kind of... We're not that kind of person.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm not selling anything from the site, but, I mean, it just is – it is disappointing sometimes when you know, I mean, I can't respond. I love everybody's emails that they send me, but I simply can't respond to all of them. And if I do respond, I mean, I love all of you. I love everybody. I don't know how to hate people. I don't know anybody that I actually have a problem with, you know. And I get angry with people. Sure, I do. But, you know, I don't hold grudges and I don't hate people. So – but you know, it's just unnerving. So it does put you off responding to people. But I do try to respond to some of them. I mean, some of them really do tug at the heartstrings, and I really do want to write to people. But it does get difficult.
Well, I think that's the whole point about moral obligation and having a conscience and whatnot. Is you can't just sit back and ignore everything and everybody when you are in fact digesting some of this content. When you are aware that a lot of the stuff that's happening to people out there is very real, and that they get locked up in psych wards for it, or they get tortured, etc., by police. You know, these are the kind of real things that we have to emotionally deal with, but. I don't know about you, but I feel a sort of a moral obligation, maybe even just a little bit of guilt there, if I don't help or listen to those people because it's too painful for me to listen to because I've heard too much of it.
Well, yeah, I mean, I try to respond on the shows as well to a lot of them, you know. But, I mean, in the shows as well, I mean, I hope I'm not providing any information that kind of freaks people out. I've tried to present all of it in the perspective of opportunity. And there's a reason you need to have this information, and there is an opportunity that it provides for you. That's what I've really tried to do with this show. I think there's enough people out there bringing all of the negative stuff to people already, and that what you just described is what happens to people. They find out about this stuff, and they begin to freefall. And I've tried to provide a safety net. That's a lot of what I've tried to do with Surviving the Matrix right from the beginning. That's a lot of the reason why I even accepted the offer to do this show. Because I thought people need a safety net. They need to understand that all is not lost. You know, this isn't, you know, the worst time in history. It's actually one of the best times in history. It's actually one of the greatest opportunities we've ever had for freedom, because it's the first time in history when the workings of the mechanism have been laid so bare for all to see. And we do have the strength of numbers to actually pull off some pretty good change if we apply ourselves to the situation.
So long as each of that number realizes their own part to play in this grand scheme.
Yeah, yeah, and that comes through realizing their own power. So that's why I've concentrated on that so much through the shows. And that's what I've tried to do, though, is provide a safety net. So hopefully that's not what I do. Hopefully people don't go into fear and you know, I mean, a lot of the stuff I get, a lot of the mail I get are from people who tell me that it's changed their life, the information has changed their lives. And because it's changed their lives, it's also changed the lives of their children. And things are so much better for them now. They understand themselves now. They understand how to deal with the system now. They don't feel disempowered anymore. They feel like they're on the front line now, and they're stepping up, and they realize that there is a growing wave of consciousness. I get a lot of positive emails like that of people that are applying themselves to their situations in their own communities. And it's a great thing to see. It makes it all worthwhile. It really does. I don't get a lot of emails from people who are just feeling disempowered. Sometimes I get people saying, oh, I've got a court case. I need some support. Can you give me some moral support? And I try to do that. But most of the emails, the majority of emails I get are very, very positive from people.
Well, it is, and for every one person who's going totally nuts and being really nasty sort of thing, there's 10 people who do the exact opposite, and it does kind of, I don't know, for some reason, you remember the worst ones.
They affect you more. You think, what am I doing wrong? Why does this person hate me? I mean, I get a certain amount of hate mail from people who just spread disinformation about me as well. I mean, I get that. But kind of, you know, you're making a difference when people spread disinformation and start claiming you're a government agent or whatever, you know. So that's an interesting.
I think Jordan Maxwell could totally relate to that, bro.
Oh, mate, you think, what would the government possibly have to gain by me saying some of the things I've said? If you listen to the shows that I say, I mean, the shows that I've done, people write to me and say, I don't know how you get away with saying what you do. Well, they haven't put you in jail already, you know.
It's because they're not all powerful, bro.
No, they're not. They're not as powerful as everyone thinks they are. They just like people to think that they're all powerful, you know. But it's a meme. It's just an idea. You know, everyone thinks the Illuminati is this all-powerful organization and they got everything covered. Well, if you think that, then they have. You're not going to do anything, are you? You know, I don't think they do at all. I don't think they control shit. They don't control me, that's for sure. So I'll do what I want to do and I'll say what I want to say. So, but people, yeah, they put out disinformation, say I'm this and I'm that. You know, they say, oh, he's running a PSYOP. Oh, really? What is it? What's the PSYOP I'm running? Oh, they won't tell you what that is.
Have you ever been accused of being replaced by a clone?
Oh, no, I haven't.
It happened to me for the first time today, bro. Oh, yeah, that's a new one.
I've been accused of wearing a prosthetic face. Yeah, it gets better and better, doesn't it?
Oh my God! You know, like some of you people that abuse us, I don't think you realise that you are actually one of our prime sources of amusement as well.
Yeah, it's a classic. What is that? A prosthetic face? Isn't that a mask?
He's wearing a prosthetic face. Oh my God. Oh my God, that's a new one on me. And of course, it's currently on you, on your face.
Yeah, that's a classic, mate. You couldn't make this shit up, you know?
You just can't. I feel better all of a sudden. I feel much better. Thank you very much for listening, ladies and gentlemen, to Vinnie Eastwood, Max Egan, and the ghost of Jordan Maxwell. Again, by the way, Jordan is in deep trouble. Mostly just basically all his belongings, computer program, all his books, all his clothes, his computers, microphones, Comrex box, the whole deal. It burned to the ground this morning. So if you want to give him a hand, please go to jordanmaxwellshow.com, not jordanmaxwell.com. I want to remind you specifically, jordanmaxwellshow.com, not jordanmaxwell.com, because that's apparently run by a bunch of scumbags who tried to copyright his name and steal all his content and are currently collecting money in his name as well and not giving him any. You know how much that hurts, ladies and gentlemen? If you're 74 years old and all your work comes to that, and then everything that was left just burnt to the ground. Help the man out. Please. I can't. I can help him out by asking for him on his behalf. But I need your help as well, ladies and gentlemen. You know, donations and subscriptions are what I live off. I need help and support every day just to keep helping and supporting other people. You know, I can't pay you back. I can pay it forward, though. That's about right. Thank you very much, Max. Thank you very much, the ghost of Jordan Maxwell. And we will see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen. Sooner.